You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, September 30th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from alexisguide.net, Alex Eberling.
It's you!
From BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And I'm your long-suffering host from 910 Comics, that's 910cmx.com, Thomas Revor. And let's go ahead and head over to news. Eric, you've got the top story today. What do we have?
In our top story today, Kickstarter is changing its rules on crowdsourcing for pre-orders. It seems that Kickstarter is getting a lot of pressure, basically on people starting up Kickstarters with no intention to actually fulfilling the orders and just putting up drawings or designs. They have set up a number of new conditions that require that Kickstarter is... If you have a Kickstarter and you have to have close to a finished product that you can demonstrate actually works before it will go up there. So it's learning from their past mistakes and also heading off some problems in the future of having people not deliver on their promises with Kickstarter. That's our top story coming to us from boingboing.net.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Eric, again. And now let's go ahead and, Alex, you've got some news that's definitely buzzworthy for us. What's the buzz today?
This week in Buzz, first up via comicsbeat.com and icv2.com, comic book writer Greg Rucka has shared some candid comments about working conditions at Marvel Comics. Rucka, a three-time Eisner winner, worked for DC Comics for a better part of the 2000s and has been working at Marvel Comics since 2010, doing writing for The Punisher. In an interview with Clint Magazine, Rucka says of the publisher, "Despite what the publishers say, their interest in the talent is minimal now. The interest is only in promoting the financial worth of their properties. That was not the case as 2 or 3 years ago when there was an exclusive war, but it's all gone by the wayside now. Ultimately, they are saying, we don't need you because they can get a million more just like you." Along with other comments, Rucka pretty much sums it up as being burnt out on the creative process, while acknowledging that the characters and properties are owned by the corporations, who have every right to maximize their profits. You can check out both articles in the show notes. Next up, on September 19th, John Campbell of the webcomic Pictures for Sad Children posted an unusual update to his recent Kickstarter campaign, claiming to have been faking depression in order to garner sympathy and raise more funds for his project, which was a book collection of his comic titled Sad Pictures for Children. The post caused a wave of backlash against the creator from individuals who do or have suffered from depression. Understandably, many people are upset about Campbell trivializing and supposedly faking the condition in order to manipulate his backers. Other fans and readers of Campbell's work, in response to the backlash, are insisting that his post was satirical in nature and should not be taken seriously. You can read Campbell's post and decide for yourself over at Kickstarter.com in the show notes. Next, the Infinite Canvas has once again reared its head in the webcomics world via a recent XKCD update. In the September 19th update, Randall Monroe treated his readers to a giant landscape in the final panel of the comic, which you can click and drag around ad infinitum. Some XKCD fans in the forum speculated that click and drag might be Monroe's final installment of the comic, but that has since been dispelled. The comic has continued to update as usual. And as XKC readers are wont to do, there is also a rehosted version of the giant map so you can see it all at once and zoom in on the parts that interest you. Check out the links to webcomicoverlook.com and Robot6 for their respective commentaries on the comic in the show notes. And moving on, it seems that NCSoft, the company behind the MMORPG City of Heroes, has abruptly decided to pull the plug on the game. However, there is an online campaign and petition to keep City of Heroes from being shut down, coming to us from none other than Scott Kurtz and Brad Geiger. Having a certain fondness for the game, which has helped them both build and expand their respective fan bases over the years, Kurtz and Geiger both posted links to the change.org petition in hopes that their readers will help to keep the game active. You can check out all the details at pvponline.com. And finally, over at giantitp.com, Rich Berlew has posted an update regarding the immediate future of his comic Order of the Stick. After cutting his hand on some glass and severing several tendons in his thumb, he's recovering well, but will be taking a much-needed break from producing the comic to rest and heal. He will hopefully be able to draw after about 6 weeks, albeit at a slower pace than usual. All our best goes out to Rich, and we wish him a speedy recovery. And that's it for Buzz.
Wow, severing tendons and thumb. I mean, I hope that everything heals properly over there. We definitely want to see him come back to drawing. But speaking about pains, but a little lower down than the hand, Eric, you've got our legal division today, and we've got somebody who's returned like the bad penny. Who is he?
Charles Carrion, our old friend from back in the day. As you remember, a few months ago, Charles Carrion challenged the oatmeal to a pissing contest on the internet and lost badly. He went through and tried to sue the oatmeal, tried to sue the World Wildlife Foundation, tried to sue the American Cancer Foundation, tried to sue the District Attorney of California, all in an attempt to stop a Kickstarter that was raising a good deal of money. The backlash from that produced a parody site, Charles-Carrion, where the creator of that site parodies Charles Carrion and generally makes fun of him. This upset Charles Carrion, and he threatened to sue sometime in the future when the creator of the site didn't have legal representation. They started a countersuit to prevent Charles Carrion from following through on his threat, so now Charles Carrion is continuing his quest to sue the entire world by suing Walgreens. It seems that the owner of this parody site works at Walgreens, and that association is enough for Charles Carrion to sue the entire chain of Walgreens for their association with someone who owns a site that he doesn't like. We will see how this court case continues, but it just gets weirder and weirder. But that's all from Charles Carrion for now. Look in your mail. You will be getting a letter of suit sometime in the next 3 months from him. Back to you, Tom.
I'm waiting to hear that he's suing the state of Kansas because of the musical group of the same name song, Carry On My Wayward Son.
Yeah.
What a bump.
It's on his list, without doubt.
But we've also, on the better side of the news, you've also got some very interesting stuff coming out, including something from one of my favorite businesses of all time, over in our education division, Eric.
Yep. We have a number of things in education, starting off with a really great video, The Art of Web Design, which is really a history of the web and the web design process. It takes you from the beginning of basic HTML and shows how web design has evolved over the years in incorporating new technology. This coming to us from boingbind.net, and it's a very interesting video to watch. Check it out in the show notes to just learn where the internet came from. Our next story comes to us from First and Second Books, and it's on pitching comics. And this is more for a print comic perspective, but it talks about the process of actually writing a pitch and having it sent to a publisher. Not really a webcomic related, but it is something to look at if you're planning on pitching any of your works to a professional publisher. Our last one, and I'm assuming this is your favorite one here, Tom, is from Pixar. Pixar gives us a number of very quick and easy to follow rules for telling stories. And it is 22 basic rules to tell a story, giving you a theme. Things like once upon a time there was blank, every day blank, one day blank, because of that blank, until finally blank. So it gives you little guidelines to sort of tool your stories from the Pixar way of doing things. In the tech section, we have an article from GigaOM talking about Walmart stopping selling Kindles, but this is part of a trend of all the box stores stopping selling Kindles. It seems that the box stores now officially see Amazon as a competitor and are no longer selling their products. They want to sell their own readers, and Walmart is the last one to stop selling Kindles as part of their store in an attempt to sort of push out Amazon and maintain their hold on their market. And so we're going to be following the story more, but it's something to keep your eyes on. That's all we have in the tech this week, Tom.
Thank you. And Alex, I know that you can be overly critical at times. I just listened to what you and everybody else says about Eric. But we've got something on that trend over in the tidbits. You want to tell us all about it?
I don't know. Are you just going to criticize me about it?
Of course. That's my job.
All right. First up in the tidbits, over on DylanMaconis.com and coming to us via Robot 6, Dylan Maconis has shared a guide on how to write effective critiques of comics, arguing that many people still just don't know how to read comics properly and in a critical fashion, which you can check out in the show notes. Next up, over on ComicsBeat.com, they are covering the often controversial subject of fan art, as testified by Laura Innes, the creator behind The Dreamer, at TheDreamerComic.com. In a recent post on The Dreamer blog, she lays out what types of fan art she is and is not comfortable with when it comes to her characters. You can check out the whole story via the links in our show notes. And via ComicsBeat.com, the 2012 Joe Shuster Awards, honoring the best in Canadian comics, were recently given out at the Montreal Comic Con on September 15th. Particular winners of interest were Emily Carroll, who received the award for Outstanding Webcomics Creator, and Ramon K. Perez, who won for Outstanding Comic Book Cartoonist. Congratulations to all the winners this year. You can peruse the entire list over at JoeShusterAwards.com. And over at Robot 6, the 2012 Ignatz Awards were also recently announced out at the Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland. The Outstanding Online Comic Award went to Jillian Tamaki for her comic Super Mutant Magic Academy. Our congratulations go out, and once again, you can check out the full list of winners via the links in the show notes. And that is it for Tidbits.
Thank you very much, Alex. And before we take our second break and head to our discussion, I want to add one other piece of news in, and that is for those of you who would plan on attending the 2013 San Diego Comic-Con, professional registration is now open. Make sure to head over to comic-con.org. If you are professional, they do have certain requirements that are needed, but go ahead and put your registration in and cross your fingers that you get in. It's a hell of a show. But with that said, let's go ahead and take our second break, and we'll be back with our discussion period and a lot more guests right after this.
This is The Fump.
You close your freezer door, but does the light go out? It's the hokey-pokey, really, what it's all about. The trivial mystery.
Starting up the bath salts. Puts me into space. Makes me kind of hungry for someone else's face.
He'll be the world's most faithful suitor when he sees the tattoo of Captain Kirk on her booters. With the geek by your side. Even if
fly and dial 867-5309 to call up Jenny and I'll make a mind.
In the 80s, we'll talk about days gone by. In the 80s, when a woman's hair was high.
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. thefump.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Put on your asbestos underwear because it's time for our discussion. We've got a crowded room of guests today, starting off with, from Hero in Training, Stefan Barton Ross.
Good day, everyone.
From the Animation Aficionados Podcast, TV's Mr. Neil.
That's right, I'm back on the Webcast Beacon Network.
And his cohort in crime, Ben Carver.
Yes, and you can also check out our collective work on crossoverkill.com.
And that also leaves us with our regular guests from alexisguide.net, of course, Alex Heberling.
Well, what?
From BladeBuddy.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
And that leaves me, Thomas Rohr from 910CMX.com, and also MurrayandLouie.com, where we're celebrating our second anniversary this week. Woohoo!
Yay!
Congratulations.
There was much rejoicing. Yay.
Yes. Tell me about that.
God, it's but 2 years already, really.
Discussion topics. We're going to go ahead and start off with our top story, of course, where Kickstarter is recommitting to ideas instead of pre-orders. We've had a lot of news about Kickstarter over the past number of months. Well, actually, since Kickstarter opened, with the projects that have gone in, some of the ideas that have worked, some of the ones that have failed, and they've done a lot of reworking from what I've seen because of some of the stuff that's gone on. And Eric, you were saying it was primarily because of the story that NPR did.
Yeah, NPR, I mean, it's not so much a story that NPR did. NPR did a story on Kickstarter, and it was a pretty much, you know, an uninformed story on Kickstarter. There's this thing on the web called Kickstarter. I knew you had to jump on that. But
absolutely.
What happened in the story is one of the things the reporter brought up was, what happens if the person doesn't deliver on what they've promised? And they said there doesn't seem to be anything that Kickstarter can do for that. Now, on a certain level, I think we all knew this, but that caused the internet to explode, because now an official news organization was questioning Kickstarter, and it started echoing throughout the entire internet of all these people saying, well, what happens if they don't deliver? So Kickstarter is really kind of worried now of the first big failure, of the first person who collects $1 million and goes to Aruba, you know, and that's the end of that. Because Aruba, there is no mechanism.
In other words, rut-row raggy.
But you see, I mean, to me, it would seem like, I think on one hand, this is a good idea, but it's also a big to-do about nothing. It would be right down to a civil case, a class action suit against the people who failed come through. If Kickstarter said, you know what, this is all we're doing is facilitating this, we can protect ourselves, we'll do some of this stuff, but if there's a problem, these are the steps you need to take. Yeah, I don't see what the problem that Kickstarter would have.
The problem,
I can see them covering their butts, but
the problem with Kickstarter is all based on a trust, you know, and so if there's no trust of Kickstarter, people aren't going to give their money to it, and all of a sudden, you won't have these $1 million deals. I mean,
that's the same with any business. I mean, if you have investors in any business, they have to have some sort of trust. And like I said, I mean, it's primarily Kickstarter covering their butts, which I am completely for. You cannot have a business without having, as you said, a certain level of trust and a certain level of protection in that business.
A certain level of butt coveredness.
Yeah. And there's a lot of butts out there to cover.
Yeah, but I mean, Kickstarter is now a multi-million dollar business, all based on trust. And the trust is completely fictitious. You know, there is nothing keeping a person from getting $1 million and running off to Aruba with it. There's nothing. And the moment the people...
That's not true. That's not true. There's the internet. Because, let me put it this way. Let's say if someone is like Douchey Miss Douchebag or Scott Kurtz, and they start a Kickstarter called I Don't Want to Work for the Rest of My Life, and no one's going to put money in that.
But here's the thing. What if they start a Kickstarter that says, I want to turn your iPhone into a tricorder, and I'm going to make a tricorder kit for your iPhone, you know, and all of a sudden all the geeks say, that's awesome, my iPhone's going to work like a tricorder. These people, the person who puts it up has no electronics experience, no intention of doing any of this, grabs the money and runs, or even if they do have intention, what if it just fails? What if they thought it was a good idea, but it didn't work out? What happens to all the people who invest? Well, they've lost all their money, and they didn't get what they want. And the realization of that is going to suppress Kickstarter sales.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I could see them having the requirement of prior, not just prior art, but a working prototype before they ask for dime one.
Well, yeah. In my mind...
Go ahead.
There's a difference between someone kind of putting up something that they never intended to fulfill and someone putting up something that they intend to fulfill but fail. One is fraud, the other is just failing your investment. And I think I kind of like the way that Kickstarter's done things because it promotes consumer awareness. It's not like you go on Kickstarter and you just expect Kickstarter to have done all this research for you to say, you know, this product is going to be viable. It outright says, we can't guarantee that whoever's doing this will give you anything. You have to look at what they're saying and judge based on what they're saying whether you trust them. So when I go and read a lot of Kickstarter things, you know, it's got this long intro saying, like, okay, this is who I am. This is my experience. This is, like, why you will trust me that I can deliver this project. Like, here's other projects I've worked on. Here's what I'm doing to make sure this is viable, yada, yada, yada. And they give you all this sort of, you know, this is why you can trust me. And you have to make the judgment, do I trust this person to deliver on their promise or not? It's not something that's done for you.
If you're going to go for investors, there's that one TV show on the Shark Pit or whatever it's called. Shark Tank, where you go in, you try to get investors from real people who have made money and who have run real businesses and saying, this is what I've got, this is my prototype, this is why I think it'll be done. You've got to have your business plan ready. You've got to have your stuff ready. You have to have your ducks in a row before you can even go in there. And even then, it's a crapshoot if something strikes one of the investors.
Well, there's a difference between the Shark Tank and Kickstarter. And the Shark Tank, these investors, Mark Cuban included, they actually put in money. They buy equity of the business, so they buy 30% of the business. That's what backs up their investment, because now they own a part of Joe Schmo's business. With Kickstarter, you put in $5, you put in $5,000. You don't own any percentage of that business you put in. Like let's say Ouya. Let's say I believe in Ouya. I don't. I think Ouya is vaporware. Let's say I believe in Ouya. Let's say I put in $5,000 into Ouya's Kickstarter when Ouya's Kickstarter started. I don't own any shares in the company. I'm basically just throwing money in Kickstarter on the hopes of the company working. And if they have a certain dollar amount for a console, and we're a console, it's all strictly because you believe in it. And this is a case of buyer beware. And I'm all for a buyer beware market.
One of the things that you had to have with Kickstarter was you had to have a valid business plan. You had to have at least some sort of setup. And it wasn't just I was going to donate $5,000. It was you were putting $5,000 in, and that's why they had the tier level. I put X amount of dollars in, and I will be getting X, Y, Z, A, B, and C. So it wasn't just I'm giving this money. It's I'm giving this money in expectation, in which case a social contract, a more than verbal contract is given saying, I give you this, you will give me this when that level is reached and when things are done. If that fails on either end, then you have to take it through the courts.
Yeah, but the important thing you just went over there, Tom, it isn't a legal contract.
Okay. Actually, it kind of is, but at the same time, you know, if like I said with Ouya, they say put in $100 and you'll get a console, but at the same time, you look at it, it's you're not buying equity in the company. You don't own a percentage. That's the biggest difference. And they have milestones of donating so much. Like let's say I donate $30 to Penny Arcade's little sham there, and does that mean I really expect that Gabe and Tycho yelled at a duck?
I think that Kickstarter is a little bit satirical.
As soon as you put it up there, I don't care if they're being satirical or not. I mean, it wasn't saying they didn't have a disclaimer at the bottom saying all this is us being funny. It was you do this, we will do this. As soon as that is written out and that is put up, there are certain expectations that are made that is a legal contract. In Texas, if you just spoke it out loud, it would still be a legal contract, a verbal contract, but still a legal contract. By putting it on the internet and saying, especially through something like Kickstarter, where you've got the business and they've got certain expectations that are made. I mean, yelling at the duck, if they made that money and they had achieved their Kickstarter and you gave them that money, they had better damn well be out yelling at ducks.
So you're going to fly all the way to Washington State to watch Gabe and Tycho yell at ducks?
No, actually, if I were to donate that money in, there would be certain expectations again. I would want to see a video, some sort of recording of them yelling at ducks to show that they had accomplished what I had paid for.
I was just about to say, like, I totally see the Penny Arcade guys doing something like that. Like, doing a video of them, like, yelling at ducks.
Well, Tycho also said if you donate $60, he'll think about you while he has sex with his wife.
So they're going to have a much more fruitful relationship, I'm guessing.
Well, and I figure, I mean, why should he be any different than his wife? So, but on that note, let's go ahead and go to our next subject, which will have us argue just as much.
I want to come back to the starter for a second. Because I've got quite a bit of experience with using it now, and it interested me that they're moving away from this idea of you pledge to get something, as opposed to you pledge because you're interested in the idea that they're selling. Because I've actually been involved in two miniature war game Kickstarters. Now, just to show you how popular these things are, the most recent one, they started out with $20,000 as their goal. They got $728,000. And the result of that was the pledge level I ordered, which was $150. Originally came with like $150 worth of stuff, but as they added in, you know, what are they, stretch goals, I'm ending up getting like $500 of retail value of stuff from them, rather than like I just give you $150 because I like what you're doing, which was the original idea, and I just get, you know, a sampler because I like what you're doing, and that's this whole idea of it becoming it's almost a way of like doing your opening sale of a product rather than, hey, it'd be really cool if we could do this. If you want to toss some money in, we'll, you know, say thank you nicely, which was kind of the original idea behind Kickstarter. It wasn't about investing in a product so you got a copy of that product, if that makes sense. It was investing in the product because you liked the idea of that product and you wanted to get it off the ground so you could buy it later, almost.
It's more expectations. You want to see the project work, but you are expecting something in return as opposed to the Andy Hardy, let's get everybody together and throw a play in our garage type thing.
Yeah, sort of. But the curious and particularly interesting thing for me about all of this is the idea was that traditional investment has always been, or at least normally is these days, financial and distant. So there are investment groups that take money, analyze what will make the most money, and go, okay, we'll put money into that. So all the big, you know, movie studios, the big comic studios, all these sort of like large companies are backed by investment and investment logic that is purely financial. Whereas Kickstarter is the absolute opposite. Instead of investing financial and looking for financial benefits from your investment, you're investing a little money and a lot of sort of like social trust in whatever you're investing in. And you're expecting to get social and more nebulous benefits rather than financial things out of it. So it's a way of investing in culture, if that makes sense, rather than just outright money, which is great for us creative types who are into games and into webcomics and into culture, because the financial system really doesn't do a good job of delivering interesting culture, as we can see by Hollywood, we can see by Marvel. They get it wrong more often than they get it right, purely because financial analysis isn't a good way of delivering good cultural literature or product.
And I think that's a great way to sum it up. Let's go ahead and we're going to go on to our next topic now. Our second story was on from the webcomic Pictures of Our Sad Children, John Campbell, who had a Kickstarter campaign. And as part of it, to help promote it, quote unquote, my quotes, he claimed to have depression. Now,
no, he didn't claim to have depression. He just randomly started this post, and this is where things went. He had made $50,000 So he had made a ton of money. And so for his second update, he posts this rambling, nonsensical post about, you know, his comic is called Pictures for Sad Children, and his comic is really depressing and kind of gruesome. And he posts this post about how he's a happy man pretending to be sad, and how he constantly goes up to other people who he knows are pretending to be sad too and say, hey, what's it like to be pretending to be sad? And they don't know what he's talking about. And so it was really, I mean, it was his type of humor, and it was very clear he was doing a bit. But at the same time, he said in the bit, people who have depression are just faking it, which is offensive.
He seemed it.
What?
He seemed it.
He seemed it, and I mean, that was part of the bit. And
I think he saw as in Charlie Sheen, right?
Yeah. Tiger blood. Winning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he didn't sheen it. This was part of his bit, and I mean, Pictures for Sad Children is a comic that is controversial and does these horrible things and says horrible things.
And, in other words, he's a troll, and the whole entire post was trolling, and he's getting his publicity and he's getting his money because he's an obnoxious troll.
Yeah, but I mean, this is his.
Understandably, people who suffer from depression. don't really appreciate these kind of jokes.
Yeah.
I
think at least half of us here probably do suffer from depression.
Would you like to hear about my last year and a half? Yeah.
I'll treat you for 45 of them.
Do we count when we're listening to you, Tom, or just in general?
I've got to go over and slit my wrists again.
No, but I mean, yeah, it was really offensive. But his comic is offensive. Pictures for Sad Children is an offensive comic, and it has that audience of being offensive. So
that's he can have an offensive comic. To me, it seems like some of these people are the backlash against the people who have a problem with what he did is more of the story. Yeah. Insisting that his post was satirical in nature and should not be taken seriously. Folks, if you do something like this, there is going to be some sort of backlash. Live with it. You can either go through and say, those are people, they've got a point, or you can take the road that some of these people are saying as well. Yeah, you got to deal with it. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
We have the right to be insulted by it.
Yeah, actions have consequences. And I mean, the point of satire is not to attack vulnerable groups and people. It's to point out the things that are to empower. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
I mean, I'd like to introduce you to the internet. That's not
how it works. I know, Eric. I know.
Hi, internet.
Well, there's a difference between, you know, some jackass who goes out there. Excuse me.
The point is that this was not even if this was not serious. This doesn't count as satire. It's just trolling.
And the fact that he was doing this while he was asking people for money, that adds another level of disgust to me.
Actually, he did this after people had given him money, and the campaign was hugely successful.
Yeah.
And that makes it even worse. He's got all this money, now let's go through and insult some of the people who did it to us.
Yeah, that was the real problem, is that, you know, even if you're on the camp that this was satire, and I read through the entire post. It's more insane than satire. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But even if it's satire, when people have just given you $50,000, you don't do a bit. You say, thank you, I appreciate the money, and you leave the stage. That's the way you do it. You don't try to do some sort of satire that's really offensive.
I think you've got it exactly right. I mean, let me ask, is there anything else anybody wants to add on this story, other than the fact that this guy's a jerk?
Well, I think he's not so much a jerk, because he did a bit, and then later on he posted a retraction basically saying, again, it was really hard to read through, but basically saying, look, I didn't mean to insult anyone who had depression.
But you see, actually, that adds a whole different layer. I mean, if the fact that he posted a retraction says, I knew what I did was wrong, and people took it this way.
No, he posted a post that, it's incredibly hard to understand what he's talking about. But what he seemed to say was, I didn't realize people would take it this way, And I didn't mean to insult people who have depression. It was a bit. I'm sorry.
Okay,
and,
so it was.
Yeah,
more
I mean,
the...
coming from, I mean, I'm cursor. I'm only vaguely familiar with Pictures for Sad Children. I've seen some comics that have been passed around and stuff. I have no idea who the fuck John Campbell is or what his deal is. It's like if I read something like what he posted on the Kickstarter update, you know, going into it cold, as I did, yeah, I'm going to take it the wrong way.
Yeah.
I mean, did he not think anybody would possibly not know who he is?
Right, and you can't get the influence, the subtleties of language when you're just writing something on the internet. I mean, if you could say, boy, you look good today, as opposed to, boy, you look good today. I mean, you just can't get the subtleties in the inflections, in the tone that is just in straight thing. You cannot do good sarcasm on the internet.
And go ahead.
You just got to learn the subtle touch of the emoticon.
Well,
he forgot to put the LOL smiley face at the end.
Yeah. In this case, his problem was being completely incomprehensible. I mean, anyone who's listening to this discussion, I'm going to ask you in the show notes to go over and read the entire post, because it is rambling and really hard to follow. And there are parts of it that are offensive, and then there's parts that just don't make any sense, and it just goes all over the place, and it's weird. So I don't blame him so much, because this is a person who's not very good at communicating.
No,
from that description, I mean, that describes about 50% of the trolls we've had to deal with.
Yeah, but
rambling and insulting, you know?
Yeah, I don't blame him as so much as I blame the people who are vehemently defending him. He did something insulting. You don't defend someone who, when they do something insulting. You say, okay, look, he didn't mean it this way, but I know why you're insulted and you have a right to be insulted. And the people rallying around him is really rude, because that's throwing salt into the wound. They're saying, look at all you depressed people. He was just having a joke, and you should get that. And stop being so upset. Which is just really rude.
I mean, who's the bigger fool? The fool or the fool who follows him?
Yeah.
Yeah. But on that note, speaking about fools... let's go ahead and go to our third topic of discussion, and that is NCSoft shutting down City of Heroes. Now, anytime that you see a story like this, it kind of tugs at my heartstrings, too, because there are a lot of games I love playing, like Mega Wars 3 back in old CompuServe, that when it finally gets closed down, the nostalgia comes back. But it's usually because of a business aspect. You know, it's just not making money. But Scott Kurtz and Brad Geiger have decided to do a change.org petition to have NCSoft bring it back.
Honestly, I have feelings about City of Heroes as someone who has played it in the past. It is the kind of game that will not let you play it casually because of the way that the people who do play it play it. You can't play it solo because the respawning baddies are way too many of them. You either have to level up on incredibly easy areas and just keep on leveling up slowly that way, or where you obviously take out people that are like way underneath you just to be safe. That's the only way you can play solo, or you have to find a guild or a team or what have you that's. That you have to join, and you have to go to their message boards all the time, and you have to... It's not a friendly... It's not newbie friendly. It isn't. It's just... You have to role play with these people. You have to do this. You have to do that. And I wasn't interested in that. I had a friend named Rob who's like... You know, who got me into City of Heroes. I created a character based on my webcomic character. And I actually met some readers that way on City of Heroes. But, you know, with the monthly fee and the fact that you can't play on your own or people who are randomly running around and you say, hey, you want to join me on this mission? They're like, no, I'm part of this guild. And it's closed off to someone who's a casual player.
Oh, and let me go over to Kurtz's own blog, and I think he's got the big thing right here. One of the last paragraphs in his blog says, I have not played City of Heroes in quite a while, but the game still has a very strong and passionate player base. First of all, if you haven't played it in a while, you're probably not the only one who hasn't played it in a while. And having a strong and passionate player base, generally the fact that he doesn't mention that it's not a large player base, which means it's a small player base, which is not enough to run a business like that off of. It's going
exactly,
to be
not to
financial.
Not to mention the fact that Sea of Heroes has changed its model multiple times. They originally did a comic series that they released issues every time they released new editions of the game. They had actually had some real writers writing these comics. They had backstories for the heroes that just stand around like statues. They had all this backstory. They had all this stuff about the alternate timelines, dimensions, and stuff like that. And then you paid all this money to go through this for years. You paid at least $600 to go through all this, and then now it's free to play.
Right, which is probably one of the better things that they did. I look at something like World of Warcraft, which still has people going gaga over it. They just came out with a new expansion for it, and people are lusting over that. To a game I play all the time, Team Fortress 2, which is building its business off of little additions which you can get in the game, which you can pay for, or the new Man versus Machine, where you spend $1 to play with your friends on a professional server. That is how you can sustain a business. City of Heroes just didn't have the momentum or the large enough fan base that was willing to pay for this stuff to keep it going.
And Tom, let's be fair.
To see City of Heroes go down.
Tom, let's be fair. Team Fortress 2 is a hat-buying game with a first-person shooter thrown in.
That is becoming one of the oldest jokes on the internet.
But we're really City of Heroes. Like I said, the biggest problem with City of Heroes versus other games...
Lack of hats.
Is City of Heroes just keeps on throwing... Like I said, it was a very prohibitive experience trying to play it because you either have to have friends that are already like insanely high levels already... Or join a guild, or join a group, or a super team, or you're fucked.
Yeah, when you've got competitors like Marvel has their superhero squad game, and then DC has DC Universe Online, neither of which have really taken off either, and you've got a lot of power and name recognition behind those, City of Heroes is going to get lost, just like the Champions Online game got lost as well. Even after it went free to play, there are other things that are brighter, shinier, and easier to use.
Like I said, first person shooters online, and also World of Warcraft are a lot easier to just dive in. There's a lot less, it's not as prohibitive to the newbie, which is what makes them succeed. Well, City of Heroes, it seemed to have, in my opinion, cultivated that mindset. To where if you're new and you go in, oh my god, you're screwed unless you know somebody.
Now, to take it back,
you do realize that that is like a legitimate design choice you can make as like the game's designer here. You look at a game like Eve, which is that times 50, and Eve is alongside WoW, like the enduring success in the MMO genre.
But in Eve, you can actually steal thousands of dollars from people.
Yes, and there are differentiations, but the point is, it's an MMO that has a very high cap on where players can get, and invests almost all of its power in that high tier of players. And without learning to liaise with them, get their support, or to, in general, become part of that culture, you don't get very far in Eve. And that is what makes Eve good. It's actually part of what makes the game engaging, is that there are human power structures, not like in WoW, where all the power is created by the game environment. So you don't get guilds running around and like saying, okay, you're not allowed to fight this raid boss because we're the most powerful guild here and we control this area. That sort of thing happens in Eve. So it becomes a game of politics, it becomes a game of social interaction, it becomes a meta game, you might call it.
But Eve was marketed like that. City of Heroes was marketed as, create your superhero and play.
See, I've played DC Universe Online, and I've played City of Heroes. The experience I had with City of Heroes is pretty much like Ben describes it. I had to work with the other people. I want a game. I mean, that's one of the things I liked about DC Universe Online was I could go out by myself and I could do things solo. I don't want to have to do things. If I want to, I like the opportunity to, which is offered there, but I don't want to have to do things with everybody else. That's just that kind of, you know, when you're playing Dark Knight loner type character, you're a solo. You don't do that type of stuff. Forcing you into certain roles when that's not the character creation is just, well, but let's go ahead and sum this one up. Business decision. I hope that the change.org petition works. I don't think it will, simply because unless there's dollar signs involved, it's not going
to
go through.
Yeah, a petition is useless. Tell them to join City of Heroes to save it. Don't tell them to sign a petition. That's a whole lot of names of people saying, I really want you to keep this game on at your expense, but I'm not going to pay for it.
People sign petitions because they might agree spiritually, but they're not going to play it.
Yeah, and they don't care. I found the petition thing a very silly thing to do when you could tell all of your everyone, go give them money. Because if they got flooded with money, then they would keep it online.
Tell everyone who supports them to log on at the exact same time one day, showing people are willing to play. Do something like that.
That's just costing them money. Give them that.
They can always go through, have Gabe and Tycho license the things. I mean, they've got money to do things for video games and do the servers. But let's go ahead and go on to our next topic. And that is, we talked about over on Dylan Mekonis, that's DylanMekonis.com, via Robot6, of course, who has a guide on how to write effective critiques of comics, arguing that many people just don't know how to read them properly or critique them.
So true.
Well, after seeing a lot of the critiques that have come out about comics I have both known, worked with, or did not like, I absolutely agree with that. Most people think that just being snarky and insulting is the way to critique a comic. There is so much more to being a good critic.
Well,
exactly.
What is your goal? Because we say, oh, we've seen a lot of critiques that are just being snarky. They're not trying to be critics. They're trying to be entertainers.
Well, you know? This is something that Neil and I call goalpost moving, where if you catch them on not doing a good job as a critic, they're like, well, I wasn't trying to be a critic. I was trying to be this. It's goalpost moving.
No, but the goalpost is they're trying to be entertainers because, I mean...
Well, then why do they call themselves critics or reviewers to begin with, not the entertainer?
Because that's it's more boring of a title. It's not a very entertaining title. but, yeah, I see where you're going with that, but, I mean...
Well, like Seinfeld doesn't consider himself a consumer reporter, but his early skits were about how bleach commercials show them washing out blood.
Yeah,
you see, he wasn't reviewing bleach or shirts or anything. He was calling himself a comedian first and foremost.
Right.
That's the difference.
There is sort of a known niche for a different kind of criticism. There's like the formal criticism where you read a review, someone like goes, okay, I'm going to read this thing for you. I'm going to tell you what's good about it, what's bad about it, whether you should read it or not. And then there's the review, which is more, I have read this, I enjoyed it, did not enjoy it, and I'm going to share with you not an objective sort of critical analysis, but my views on what it did well, what it did badly, and I'm going to do it in a more kind of casual, entertaining sort of way. Which you get, like, Let's Plays, all this sort of stuff. It's a big part of amateur review culture. So you can't really say, like, just because this didn't formally critique things effectively, it's not legitimate. My favorite example is one that every webcomic author will hate, is, like, the... What's it called? Bad webcomics...
Your webcomic is bad.
See, I read that, and like it's the most vitriol-filled anger, hatred, whatever. And a lot of it was essentially just insult porn, essentially, where it's like, haha, I made a witty quip about something. But within that, there are elements of genuine criticism. Now, if you look for them, you can see them, but if you're just kind of reading the hate,
the problem becomes... The problem becomes is someone, your webcomic is bad is sort of a good example, because it started out with John Solomon doing it, and there was legitimate criticism throughout the vile, disgusting hatred.
But it was
the problem is, he then got people who read his blog and then imitated the vile, disgusting hatred, completely missing the criticism, and it just started getting worse. And John Solomon had to quit. I mean,
it became shtick. And that's the biggest problem is when you do that sort of thing, it becomes shtick. And shtick is bad, in my opinion. I'm talking to someone who has criticized many people in the past. And someone who has taken much criticism in the past. It's years and years ago, I actually wrote once the five defenses of people who don't like criticism. And this was something I wrote on a whim because I used to talk to people, and they asked me, hey, what do you think of my comic? And I told them, well, I disagree because of this and this and this. And they weren't real disagreements. They're like, well, art is subjective, so you can't say my art sucks. And on that level, I understand people who can't understand criticism, but on a different level, I understand what criticism should be. Is it criticism to the author or criticism for potential readers?
Well, yeah, see, that's the problem. The shtick, when it becomes shtick, when it becomes an act, you have done nothing. You have wasted your time. Because the author's not going to read that and make any changes. Because it's so full of hatred and so full of just bile. They're not going to read it. And
right, when somebody a moment ago said that shtick was bad, my question was, for whom is it bad? I think it's bad for the person who's doing the shtick.
Yeah,
I think
after
that's
a while
what I mean.
You're going to realize that this person isn't really doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then eventually he'll end up wearing a scat hat every Monday morning.
Yeah, I mean, We all like to beat on Scott Kurtz, but he had a good statement once. He said, I realized at one point people were just showing up to my site to see the fights. You know, and that's what happens when you do that sort of thing, that eventually people show up to do the fights. You're not changing anything, because what happens is the people you're trying to get to change their comics not going to read what you're saying. The people who are showing up to your site had no intention of reading the comic. They're coming there just to see you. They had no intention.
Just to see you tear something apart that is terrible because, it's this guy doing it. This guy only reads terrible stuff.
Yeah, and they were never going to read it. You're not reaching and you don't reach an audience who wants to read it because you're so hate-filled, they don't want to see that either.
All I can say is I recommend that everybody go over there. It's Dylan McConis, DylanMeconis.com. He's got some great examples She has some great examples on there of things to look for when you're doing a review. Things to catch yourself on so you can do a legitimate review as opposed to just being a troll or in ivory tower looking upon everybody else.
It's largely aimed at like people who are not actually inside the comics know scene, like literary reviewers and stuff like that, you know.
But even so,
telling them to ditch the kitschy titles and stuff like that,
it is valuable for a lot of comics readers.
Yes.
Because
yes,
I mean, Dylan McConis is one of the more sort of erudite and intellectual comic authors or webcomic authors around at the moment. She's definitely from the sort of highbrow field of, like, she knows her stuff. She's done her research. She's more into this than just as a hobby.
Well, on that note, I want to go ahead and I want to give Neil the last word on this topic because we're running out of time, folks. Neil?
Well, I pretty much said what I wanted to say. I said that, you get someone who's just doing snarky reviews and the people aren't showing up to learn the ins and outs of good writing. They're just showing up to see the bad comics burn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steal a line from Linkara.
Yeah.
But on that note, I want to go ahead and thank everybody for joining us today. Starting off with from the Animation Aficionados podcast, TV's Mr. Neil.
Yes.
And of course, Ben Carver.
Check us out.
And where can they find your podcast at?
AnimationAficionados.com.
I'd also like to thank from Hero in Training, Stefan Barton Ross, who, even though your host has been having a little bit of trouble recently, it should be back up very soon.
Don't worry, I don't hold it against you. That's heroandtrainingcomic.com. As Tom mentioned, it may be down for a little while, but it will be back. If you're one of my readers and you're listening to this, it'll be back. Don't worry, I'm coming back.
Doesn't I have like against. Loads of fires to upload. That's all.
Yeah, like when it's back, it's just going to be like a whole week of updates because I've missed so many.
But we also have our regulars from BladeBunny.com and one of our news gatherers, Eric Kimball.
Yeah, thank you much, Tom.
And Alex'sGuide.net's own Alex Heberling.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
And also, since he didn't join us today, I want to thank our news editor, Jason Strasberg, for collecting the news and putting it into a readable format for us. And on behalf of all of us, I'm Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Hope to see you next week, and we will see you in the funny papers.